we're learning Iyov, and this is actually the reason that I chose Iyov. It's not totally random. We did this in high school last year, or the first half of the year, and it was a good piece of learning. I thought it was worthwhile. So some of what I'll say came from them. I don't always remember to quote exactly what it was. But Iyov. Interesting, when we finished Iyov in the high school, I think Nava, one of them, said to me, why does everyone think Iyov is depressing? There's nothing depressing about Iyov. Everyone thinks that it's this terrible, sad, depressing, nothing at all. It's not, I think it's one of the least depressing books in Tanakh. So we'll see. It's not, it's deep, it's reflective, but it's not depressing at all. So first, a couple things before we really get started. Okay, so I gave you here, I'll discuss in a minute how we're going to learn it, but this is, in theory, this is the whole layout of Iyov. Ramban actually says, so I wouldn't say this myself, but Ramban says that it's a very repetitive book. Ramban says once you've learned the first 14 chapters, the first round, you're done. You don't need to keep going because it just repeats itself again and again. What you can see here is there's basically a little introduction at the beginning of the book. We'll get to that in a minute. And then there's three rounds. Each round, each speaker, Iyov, has three friends, which we'll discuss why his friends come. But once his friends come, they each speak, and Iyov always responds. And then another round, each friend speaks again, and Iyov responds around and around. The third round also. Third round, the third speaker doesn't speak, but other than that, it's pretty much all the same. Iyov talks for a while. Then the fourth friend comes in, Elihu, who was very important, because Elihu actually has the answer that ends up being accepted. Iyov doesn't reject it. Nobody rejects it. And it ends up being, even Hashem accepts it at the end of the book. Elihu's response, won't give it away, Elihu's response ends up becoming the one that's actually accepted as the response to the famous question of why righteous people suffer and why wicked people prosper. That's going to be an important one. So Elihu will get to. There are a lot of ways you could learn a book of Tanakh. And rather than go through round after round, it's interesting, I actually changed how I did this as I was doing it in high school. We started, I thought we'd go through it, and we'd do every parak, and then I realized that it's not only not necessary, it doesn't really make the same points. It's not a good way to learn the book. I decided, in the end, I changed it as we learned, we decided to go by speaker, and that's how we'll do it also. Is that first we saw Eliphaz, each speaker, and we'll see why they come in a minute, but each speaker really has a perspective. Each speaker really comes with one perspective that they have, that they share as to why righteous people suffer, why Iyov is suffering. And once you've seen that speaker's perspective and you take that perspective they have and kind of, you know, view it from other sources in Torah, you pretty much got the book. Rather than going through parak after parak or going through round after round, we'll first see today, we'll see some general ideas about Hashgacha, then we'll talk about Eliphaz 1 week, we'll talk about Bildad, and we'll spend a week on each speaker, assuming we continue, which is not not holding you hostage, obviously. This is not meant to trap you for the next 6 weeks by yourself here.
Sounds good to me.
I'm happy too, but it's not. You shouldn't feel like you have to. Okay. Anyway, so we have these speakers now. But my point also in saying that we're going by a philosophical read of the book is not. We're not going to do a pasuk by pasuk read. We're not going to look at every perush on every pasuk. It's a philosophical read. Once we figured out what it is that speaker is really getting at, and of course they don't say it clearly. They don't answer it in, you know, clear terms, usually. They speak in poetry. It's a very poetic book. It's a difficult book. But once they've given their perspective, then you can start to look at that perspective outward throughout the Masorah. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. So what we'll do now, I think we'll look at... two things. The first thing I want to look at is who Iyov was, which is not simple. And then historically. Okay. And then we'll look at what Hashgacha Pratis is, two different things. So there's the Gemara here that we'll start with on page 4. It's here on page 4. And interesting, we won't go through this whole Gemara, obviously. It's a long Gemara. What I did was the important lines are a little bigger. And then the discussion about it is after in smaller letters. We don't need to see all of that. But there's four possibilities who Yov was, and it, we'll see why this matters. We'll get to an important point in a minute. Oh, before we do that, a quick overview of the book. Sorry, that's what I meant to do. Basically, Yov is a very rich man and also a very righteous man. The whole action of the book, 95% of the action, takes place in the first two chapters, and then the last chapter. The middle part is all philosophy. Basically, Eov is a very righteous man. He's very wealthy. He's very, says, let's see. We have the way it starts out. He was a, lived in Utz, which Rashi says he was in Aram. Let's not, we won't get too bogged down. The beginning of the book says he was an Ish Tam V'yashar V'yirei Elokim V'sar Meirah. He was definitely a good person. The Mefarshim do pick up on that Sar Meira. Doesn't mean he did good.
Right.
Sort of the same ambiguity reminds you of Noah a little bit, right? Well, the Dor HaSav, I don't know. He was Sar Meira. Doesn't mean he did anything good, but he didn't do anything bad. But he was Yirei Elokim, and we generally assume he was a very good man, the way we'll see later on. He had 7 kids, lots of cattle, lots of everything you could want, 500 donkeys, you know, really a very, he was doing very well. It seems that Hashem had given him all this because he was wealthy, I mean, because he was a righteous man, that's the implication. And he was the biggest, most important man in all of the East, so he was really a big guy. He had 7 kids, so he had lots of kids, seven sons, actually, and 7 daughters. And each day, one of his sons would sponsor a party every week. It sounds like all their kids did was party. So this is interesting. The Mefarshim deal with this. Is this good? Is this bad? Because what happens is Eov, every day after they party, or every week they have a party, after they party, he always fasts for them. And that's also similar to Noach. There's a lot of Noach implications.
Where's the connection to Noach there? I'm not familiar.
Because he doesn't seem to go and tell them. Abraham's like Abraham was involved with other people and really told people, you know, about Hashem. And Noach was kind of on his own. He had to be prompted to go out and tell people about the boat, 120 years. So Yov also, you know, he's Sarmi, right? He doesn't do good things. He doesn't go and tell his kids, why are you partying all the time? But he's always making fasts. We have here in still in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Hey, Vayiki Hikifu Yimei Hamishde. When they finished the parties, Vayishlatiyo Vayikat Shem Vishkem Boger Vela Olos Mispar Kulam. So Eov would offer all these korbanot after all of the parties. Kiyomar Eov Ulai Chatu Banai. Maybe my son sinned. Uverchu Elohim Bilvavam. And they cursed Hashem. Kacha Yaseh Eov Kolheim. It's always what he did. So, okay, definitely good for himself, didn't necessarily go out and help other people. I don't know how he raised these kids, but okay. So then what happens is, they're really divided, the Mefarshim, on those psukim about the parties. Are they, is this good, is this bad, is it positive on him, negative? Vahi hayom, pasuk vav. Vayavohu b'nei ha'elohim lihisyatzev al Hashem. And the angels, we assume the angels came to meet with Hashem, big board meeting up there in Shemayim, Vayavoa Gam HaSatan. And Satan came, Besocham, Vayomer Hashem al HaSatan, Me'ayin Tavo, where are you coming from? Which is an interesting question. Vayan HaSatan, El Se Hashem, Vayomer, Mishut Ba'aratu Me'hishalech Ba, from floating and wandering in the world. That's what Satan does. And I think they connect this to Avram. It says Avram had a similar lashon by him, that he was also his Haleich Ba in the reading of Lech Lecha. Shka Avram, Rashi says, Shneemar Bo Kum Saleich Ba'aretz. Yeah. Okay. So Hashem says to Satan, Asam Tal Libcha Avdi Eov. He says in Pasuk Ches, have you seen my servant Eov? I know you've been through the whole world. Have you seen this guy? Ki Ein Kamo Ba'aretz. There's nobody like him. Yish Tam V'yashar Yirei Elohim V'sar Meirah. Such a good guy. Yeah, of course he's good, but not for free. He doesn't do it out of the goodness of his heart. It's not lishma. Hello, ata sachta va'ado uva'ad beiso uva'ad kol asher lo misaviv. Maisei ado beirach mikneu paras baretz. Yeah, you've given him many things. V'ulam shalach noy, because you've given him all of these cattle. V'ulam shalach noy yadcha v'gam. But if you affect everything he has, if you take away his stuff, he wouldn't be so such a great person anymore. He would curse you right away. He's only not cursing you because you gave him stuff. Makes sense, you know. He's not going to bite the hand that feeds him. Okay, I'll let you take away his stuff, and we'll see. We'll see who's right. Raki love al tishlach yadecha, but don't affect him. You can't touch him. So a satan goes out and he takes everything away, and they go and tell him, your cattle are dead, your children are dead. He takes everything away. But nevertheless, at the end of the parak, we'll skip. B'chol zos lochata Iyov. Oh, go even pasuk chaf. Yeah, vayakom Iyov vayikras miilo, and Iyov ripped his coat vayagaz es rosho, and he, you know, covered his head. By the way, a lot of the laws of Avedut are actually learned from Sefer Yov, some of them. Hashem nasan, Hashem lakach, Yishem Hashem v'rach famous line. He says, fine, so far he looks good. Right? Most Mefarshim will tell you that so far he's doing the right thing. You know, he hasn't messed up yet. So the Satan comes back in Perek Beis, and he says, look at, and Hashem says, look at this, he still didn't curse me, he's still good. And Satan says, yeah, because you didn't affect him. You rigged the game. You didn't let me affect him. That's only stuff. Interesting line here. Or ba'ad, or pesek dalet in perek beis. Says vayana Satan as Hashem v'yomer. Or ba'ad or skin for skin. V'chol asher la'ish yitain ba'ad nafsho. A person will always protect himself by putting his hand right. Where Rashi explains is, if someone's going to hit your face, you put your hand right in front of your face to protect yourself. So, of course, he's going to protect himself, because it's only, well, let's see Rashi.
Eber b'fnei. Wait,
what's it? So, we'll see Rashi. Pesach Dalet. We'll let Rashi explain. Eber b'fnei Eber. Kein derech b'nei Adam kisheroa acher ba'al rosho. If you see a sword coming to your head, magin b'zro, you put your hand up. L'fon ha'vikol shekein kol asher le'ish b'mamo nitein. So a person's always going to give away their stuff because it's ba'ad nafsho. Ah, so you have to read on. Asher la'ish yitain ba'ad nafsho. Because of course a person's going to protect their soul, their life, by giving away their stuff. The Hagin, the Rashi says, l'fisha zeh yodea ben nafsho sh'nizchayev l'fichach eno nitzar al mamono. Because if a person has everything taken away, they realize that they're supposed to be the ones who are killed, they're guilty, so they don't mind if some things are taken away instead. But if you let me, says Satan, if you let me take away, right? So obviously he was just reacting in a quick way. He figured he may as well protect his body, his life, by giving away his stuff. That's natural or bad or. But if you killed him himself, Yel Bisaro, Imlo El Panecha Yivarecha, you don't think he would curse you? Of course he would. Okay, he's yours. Do whatever. But you have to keep him alive. Otherwise, game's over. There's no fun. There's no point. No point in the whole thing. So you have to keep him alive, but you can take away, you can affect him in a physical way. And sure enough, he gets a terrible, terrible case of some kind of skin disease, boils. We don't even know quite what they are. Really terrible stuff. And now his reaction starts to be a little bit different, and here there's some ambiguity. What he says is, "Vayom ratzom elov ishto." So what's that? "Vayikach lo cheres lizgarbo v'huyin." What's that? "Meis b'nei v'achz iyo v'chshrushchin." "Vatom elov ishto." "Vayikach lo cheres lizgarbo v'yoshei b'socha efer." So "Vatom elov ishto." First of all, and pasuk tes odcha machazik b'sum basecha. All right, so now he hasn't said anything. He didn't say anything good.
She's speaking.
Right, but now she's speaking, and she says, "Why you're still going to be pure?" He didn't have a reaction this time, but she says, "You're still going to be, simple, pure." But Baruch Elokim v'mus. You may as well curse Hashem and die. What's the point? you know, you, if you curse him, he'll kill you, and then you'll be happier. There's no point, which is a point he's going to make later too. That's better to be dead. He says, "What's the point in being?" She says, "What's the point in being alive if you're just going to be in this terrible state anyway? Obviously, Hashem wants to kill you, so you know, curse him and die." Loving spouse.
Well, in some ways, I can see that she's being. I mean, it's not good to curse God, but in some ways, she's trying to put him out of his misery.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't be miserable anymore if you died. I mean, I guess.
I get that.
Yeah, I guess if a person is affected enough, afflicted enough. So, Vayomer Elek Daber Achas HaNevolos Tadaber. You're speaking like one of these Nevolos, and actually, they learn from here, not on this pasuk, but that his wife may have been Dina. We'll see in the Gemara in a minute that his wife may have been Dina, because she's also referred to as Achas HaNevolos.
Oh, okay.
So, okay, maybe his wife was Dina. Gamas HaTov Nikabel. We have to accept the good and the bad. May Yisrael Elohim B'Yasaralo Nikabel, but we're not going to accept the bad. Behold those. And here's some ambiguity already. Locha Ta'io Bispasav. Aha. He didn't curse him with his lips, so maybe he cursed him in his heart, they want to say. Rashi says, but he did sin in his heart. He didn't sin in his lips, but, you know, he's already starting to begrudge the whole situation. And we'll see, he does go downhill. Vayishmu Shloshes Re'iyov. So his three closest friends heard, and they come from far away, and they don't even recognize him because he's been so affected by his diseases, he doesn't even look like he used to.
Where does it say that?
Other things we learn here from Avelis.
But he's not in
Avelis.
Or is he?
Well, it's true, but over the kids.
Okay.
Yeah, here. But, okay. Very loved of our Kiro Kigadala cave mode. But it's interesting that they come now, they don't come earlier, it's true. Acharechein Pasach Iov as Pihu Vayekalel as Yomo. He doesn't curse Hashem, but he curses his day, that's the text that we'll see today. But when he goes on in the next parak, we'll see sometime, he starts to curse the day and the night and the planets and everything other than Hashem, which is either a way of not cursing Hashem but cursing him, or it's saying that Hashem would outsource all of the way he does things to other forces. But we'll see that. Okay, but that's the main action of the book.
Okay.
And from there, we have all of these rounds of speakers. Everyone's trying to explain why this righteous Iov, who really was righteous, would be treated in that way. So who was Iov? There's a Gemara here. That's page 4. And the Gemara is really interesting because it has all these different possibilities. You can see just from the larger, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, they span the gamut, really. Iov may Moshe Haya, Iov may Miraglim Haya, Iov may Ole Gola Haya. I missed one. Lo Hayav Lo Nivra, number 3. He didn't even exist. It's a parable. The whole thing is just a story. So we don't know. But what's interesting?
What does Ole Gola mean?
So may Ole Gola, from the people who went back after Ezra brought back the exiles.
Okay.
In other words, he lived in the times of Ezra and Nehemiah, times of the second base of Mikdash. Which is obviously much later than the others. I think Gemara, you know, goes back and forth on each of these. Maybe he lived in times of Moshe, because it says Eifo, but then it says, but it says Eifo by Yitzchak and Yaakov and Yosef. The word Eifo doesn't mean anything. Okay, but the word Mechokek, and Moshe says Mechokek, so okay. Maybe he lived in times of Moshe. Maybe Meraglim is interesting, number 2, because it says, in one place, Yishaya Be'eretz Utz, he lived in the place of Utz. And it also says, and Moshe, when he's telling the spies what to look for in Israel, he tells them, Hayish Ba'etz, is there a tree? Which is a funny question. Tell them if there's a tree, even a barren land. Everything has a tree.
Mm-hmm.
One tree, eight. Of course there's a tree. So me, Dami, so the Gemara says, Hacha Utz Hasam Eitz, one's Utz, one's Eitz. That's not a proof for anything. He says, no, Achi Kamar Lahu. Yeshno laoso adam sheshnosav aruchos keitz. Is there anybody whose years are long like a tree? Umegin adorokeit, and who's righteous enough that he can protect his whole generation like a tree, as he can protect and shield his generation. But I always found that very funny, and I've posed this in class, and I don't know who can answer. Why would Moshe want the spies? This is really parenthetical, but why would Moshe want the spies to find anyone who's good enough that they would protect his generation from the Jews? Most of the things Moshe told the spies to find out about were things that would be good for the Jews.
Oh, I see.
And then he seems to be telling them, oh, why don't you find if there's one guy who's good enough to protect his entire generation, and he knows there is, presumably, else he wouldn't ask if there's something named Eov. So why would he tell them to look for that? That sounds like counterintuitive, because they would say, yeah, there's this guy, Eov, he's great, we're dead, we're doomed. Why would he? I never understood that Rashi brings that down.
I don't understand it right, but could it be that he understood the impact of the Meraglim on the subsequent Dorot, and he was asking for someone to protect the people from what they were about to befall?
Ah, so you think Dorot might mean the Jewish generation, mm-hmm. not his own, meaning the Canaanese generation. Because Eov presumably lived in Canaan somewhere. But I hear what you're saying, yeah. So Mason said that a couple of years ago. That maybe Eitz is actually referring to the Jews' generations. That Yeshno Laoso Adam Sheshno Sevrucho. Maybe.
But you're saying specifically he's speaking to the Meraglim.
Yeah, he's telling the Meraglim to see when you get to Israel if there is anyone who's so righteous and long life. That's also mm-hmm. weird. But righteous, let's say, that he'll protect the whole generation like a tree. So yeah, it could be that he's referring here to the Jews.
It sounds like his
generation. Maybe it means he'll protect. Okay. Because we'll see in a minute whether he's Jewish or not Jewish. We'll get to that in a minute. Third one is fascinating. Maybe it didn't even exist. Mm-hmm. Maybe this whole thing is just a story. It's just a parable. Amar Lai, so he says back. Alecha Amar Kra, that's why it says, against you. Yish Hayab Eretzutz, there was a man. It wouldn't say there was a man if there wasn't a man. Mm-hmm. To which the Gemara responds, it says in Shmuel, Ularash Ein Kol, a rush, I think, is someone who's poor, I think a destitute person, has nothing. Ki'im Kivsa Achas, an example, I think, being given there, a story. Excuse me, to the poor person, there was nothing except one sheep. And clearly, that's just a parable being told there in Shmuel. So mihava, that person ela mashal ha bialma, that was a mashal hachinami mashal bialma. So here also, it's a mashal. So yeah, we have mashalim sometimes in Tanakh. It's no big deal. So the Gemara ends. It seems to be the end of this part. Imkein shmo v'shem yirolama. Why say where he lived? If you're just telling me an example, you don't have to tell me where he lived and how many kids and all this stuff. It could be very simple. We wouldn't need to have all this information, although we don't know when he lived. But why tell where he lived if he didn't really live? There would be no reason to tell me he lived in Utz. Okay, so he probably lived. It's probably real, although it's an interesting, for one of us to say it might be heresy, the Gemara says. Maybe it didn't even exist. Okay, then we have an important one, but we'll see why. Eov may only go Lahaya. He came back with Ezra and Nehemiah, and his base medrash was in Tveria, right? So he really, we know who he was, right? Meisive. So this says, I can't be. Yimei Shino Soshel Eov, this is a Braita, Mishash and Nichnuf Sri Yisrael and Mitzrayim V'yad Sheyatsu. It says that he lived from the time, I'm biasing you in my translation, but he lived from the time, his years were from the time that they entered Mitzrayim until they left. Yeah, 400 years. Okay. Ema, wait, but you can read that line differently. Misha could be Kimisha, the amount of time. So he lived 400 years at some point in history. He didn't necessarily live during those 400 years. He lived for 400 years whenever he lived. But didn't necessarily mean that. Now here we trip on something the Gemara does. Ve'esive, Shiva Nevi'im Nisnavu L'umot Ha'olam. Seven Nevi'im prophesized for the world, for the non-Jews, for the whole world. Ve'eluhein, Bilam, Ve'aviv, Bilam, his father apparently was a non-Jewish prophet. Seven non-Jewish prophets. Eov, Eliphaz, Bildad, Sofar, those are all people we'll meet in Eov. Elihu, another person we'll meet in Eov. Basically the cast of Eov and a few other people. And Bilam and his father. It's basically the seven. So it sounds like he wasn't even Jewish. Mm-hmm. So if he wasn't even Jewish, says the Gemara.
Why would he be coming back with?
Ah, right, with the Ole Gola, exactly. With Ezra and Nehemiah. Right. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Vali Taimech." But according to that reasoning, Elihu ben Barach, Elav Mi Yisrael Hava. But then you'd have to say that all the people on the list weren't Jewish, and Elihu definitely was Jewish. It says he was some Mishpachat Ram, and he was Jewish. So clearly the list includes Jews. Bilam wasn't Jewish, but some of the people on the list were Jewish. Ella invuye invilu umot ha'olam. No, when we said that they were Shiva Nevim for umot ha'olam, it meant that there were seven who prophesized for the non-Jews, even though
they
were Jewish.
They weren't Jewish, right?
Right, but they really were Jewish. They just prophesized. Their prophecies related to non-Jews. So Achanami here also, Eov invuye invilu umot ha'olam. So here also, Eov prophesies for the whole world. Atu kulu nevim olilo invui lumot ha'olam. What, you're saying all of the prophets in Tanakh didn't prophesize for the whole world? Of course they did. Mm-hmm. They always cared about the world around them. They weren't insular. So it says hasam. Nah, but there's a difference. Hasam, they're ikur nevim usahu li Yisrael. Yeah, but when you come to Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, people like that, their prophecy was mainly, their focus was on the Jews. Hacha, these seven ikur nevim usahu li Yisrael. Either they're not Jewish, like Bilam certainly wasn't Jewish, or they're Jewish, but they focus primarily for the umot ha'olam. They have more worldly aspirations in their
nevuah. Why is Eov's, all these issues in the prophecy around Eov seen as being specific to non-Jews?
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Meaning, we don't see that so much in the book. The book seems pretty general. What prophet? Yeah, that's a good question. And the others, too. So far, and all the people in the book, Bildad and Eliphaz and Elihu. Meaning, I think that they're not specifically non-Jew directed, but they're not specifically Jewish directed either. They're dealing with issues that are of issue to the whole world.
To God, believing in God, period.
Yeah, and why would the righteous suffer, things like that, as opposed to dealing with the Churban Beit HaMikdash, or, you know, when will the Jews return to, that's clearly, but they're, let's say, in the middle, they're in a gray area, they're umot ha'olam, the whole world, not only non-Jews, but they have a more worldly, you know, focus in their prophecy, instead of just being Jews, not only for non-Jews, but that they deal with universal themes, rather than only dealing with things that Jews would care about, like Yeshayahu might. Okay. And then we says, then it says, Hasam, okay, Mesive. No, still not good. Chasid Haya Mebumos Ha'olam. There was a non-Jew, there was a righteous man among the non-Jews. V'yoshmo, that's pretty clear. V'lo Bali Olam Ela Kedei L'Kabel Scharo. And this we'll focus on in a few minutes in Marasha. But he only came to this world to receive his reward. That was his focus in the world. We'll come to this in a minute. Hey, B'yogadosh Baruch Hu Olav Yisurin. Hashem gave him pain, gave him travails. Hisril Mecharif Mekadef. And he started to complain against Hashem, and he started to protest. Kafalo HaGadosh Baruch Hu Scharob Olam Hazeh. So, giving away the ending, but Hashem gave him double in this world, which we see at the end of the book. He'll get double of everything, double the kids, double the cattle. Kidei Letardo Min Olam Haba. So that he gets nothing in Olam Haba. Hashem was trying, says this fascinating Braita. This is
what's the reverse of Yisurin Shel Ahava? It's gifts of punishment.
That's true, which is interesting, because that's going to be one of their answers. It's going to be Bildad's answer, Yisurin Shel Ahava. But yeah, that it was supposed to be, which is why he's probably wrong, Bildad. Because you're right, it was meant, it was originally going to be, no, it was going to be Yisurin Shel Ahava. It was going to be, well, it was meant to be. Let's
but
see.
Here he's saying he's getting good order to have punishment in the next
one,
like the reverse.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, exactly. Lo bali yom, we'll have to remember that because we'll deal with Bildad. Correct. Lo bali yom elakadei v'kabos charo. He only came here to get. So we'll see the marsha in a second. Hey, because Baruch Hu, Hashem gave him pain. Kefal lo gash Baruch Hu, so he gave him double in this world, so we have nothing in the next world. That's what the marsha says. So yeah, so let's see for a second. We'll come back to that. Let's see the marsha on the next page. Of the next page.
Okay.
Yes, the Maharsha, a commentary on the Gemara that deals specifically with stories in the Gemara.
When did the Maharsha live, ballpark?
Early Achronim.
Okay.
So we'll say 1700s. We'll say, yeah, definitely ballpark, even more recently, late 1700s.
Okay.
So he focuses primarily in his commentary on Gemara on the stories.
Okay.
He can deal with back and forth. That's always a good place to go when you have stories in the Gemara. Fascinating Marsha over here. Chasid Hayabul Masolam, and it tells the whole thing. Yesh Lefarish Bazet. This is a generalization coming up. Chasid Yisrael, the righteous Jews, Einan Ba'in Le'olam Kedei L'Kabel Sharon Bolam Azet. They don't come to this world to get things in this world. Olam HaOver, which is a transient world, a passing world. They don't come to this world to get reward here. Rak la'avod avodas Hashem b'olam hazeh. They only come here to work Hashem's work here. Kidamrinan. Hayom la'asosan v'lo hayom li'tol scharon. It says in Pirkei Avos that today is to do the work, tomorrow is to receive the reward. They don't come here to receive reward. They come here to do the work. And as the Mishnah in Avos says, Sofa haschara levo me'atzmar. Masha inkein b'umos ha'olam. But the opposite is true of non-Jews, he says. The righteous people and the non-Jews kiddushim umishalim lasonav elpanav. He says, because it says he'll pay back the people he doesn't like face to face right away. V'yamar ki Iov. So what's the Gemara saying? That Iov, af sheheid olav, even though it testifies about him, hamikra shein chasid kamahu, the Gemara says, I mean, the Pasuk says, there's nothing, no one as great as him. Sort of says that. Lo nase lo kibbo kimidas ha'amor b'chasid Yisrael. He didn't act like a Jew. He didn't come here and act in a way that Jews would, you know, righteous Jews would act. Kedichsiv. Ela ke'echad ibnei shara umos. Almost sounds like he's saying he was Jewish, but he wasn't acting that way, although he doesn't exactly say those words. He could have been Jewish, but not acting like that. Because he came to this world to get reward. He wanted reward. And since a person can complain and say, I want my reward. V'yalkein Omar. So he said, well, look at what righteous Jews are doing. He said to him, look, you know, use them as an example. That Hashem will bring on them pain in this world, just in order to erase their sins. Like it says by Avraham, Shamad Eser Velo Hirachar Midosav. He got test after test and he never complained about Hashem. Kidalakaman, like we'll see. Zachain Bashar Tidika Israel, and all righteous Jews do that. Aval be Iov, when it comes to Iov. Havi Yakadosh Baruch Hu Lav Yisurin, Lemari Kavon Oseyan Bolam Hazeh. He's turning this. He wanted to erase. Sorry. I guess I'm right. He wanted to erase his sins in this world. So wait, he's twisting the Gemara around. Havi Yekadosh Baruch Hu Alav Yisrael Lamarga, to erase his sins in this world. Kadei Laseis Lo Schar Tov Lo Lam Haba. He wanted to give him more reward there. That was the point. Yeah, he's twisting the Gemara. Now it is Yisurim Shalava.
Okay.
Yeah, he's making it into yes, Yisurim Shalava. Hizchil Lamchariv Magadev. And he complained. That's why Hashem did this. Hashem said, fine, you're complaining, here, take all the reward you want. You want it now, I'll give it to you now. But there's not going to be anything in the world to come. Like the Gemara says. So he's.
So when the Gemara was focusing on the positives,
right,
to erase the good in the next world, and here he's saying he got the good to. The Gemara
is
saying he got all these
serenes
so that he'd have something good
the
next
one. Yes, okay. The Gemara. Now the Maharsha can't actually change the Gemara. So let's see. One second. Let me read that line again. I mean, it's not. It's fascinating what the Maharsha is doing with this line of Gemara. Second. Where is it? Oh. Below Bali Olam Ella Kedei LeKabel Scharo. Gemara says he only came to receive his reward. Hey, V'yugadosh Baruch Hu Lav Yisurim Hizchil Mekarif Megadev. He gave him Yisurim, and he complained, and he fetched. And the Maharsha says, no, it's not quite that. Because I think what the Maharsha is bothered by is that Hashem wouldn't really do that. But what Hashem might do, says the Maharsha, is that if you were supposed to get lots of reward here, he might postpone it till the next world. And he was just trying to, it was supposed to be a good thing, these Yisurim. They're supposed to erase the few sins he had, and then he'd have a free pass to the next world. It would be great. Kedamrinon, and we'll see the Gemara he's quoting in a minute. That was the point. So Hashem's point. Okay, we'll see that in a second. But Hashem's point, says Maharsha, was to give him extra reward in this world, so that he would have even less to worry about when he gets to the next world, and then he'd have a free pass, because the few things he did wrong here, he had Yisurin to cancel them out.
So
It wasn't that he gave him good things, he gave him Yisurin.
Yisurin.
Right.
But it was Yisurin Shalava.
Right.
To erase the few sins he had, and then he'd be, you know, he'd have a free pass. Take care of his debts here, and he'd have a free pass there. Instead, he complained about it. So Hashem said, fine, if you're kvetching now, I'll give you double. That's why at the end of the book he gets double everything here. So he says, okay, I'll give you more here. You don't want Yisurim here, you'll get it there.
Okay.
So instead of it being Yisurim Shalava, he turned it into the opposite. Yisurim Shal.
I see. So he says, if you're not liking it now, fine.
Right.
I'll listen to you, but you're going to get it later.
Right. You get what you want.
So that agrees with the Gemara.
Well, it has to.
So can I ask you a fundamental question? This
Please.
Is really basic. Yeah. So you said he can't disagree with the Gemara, but the Gemara you presented four different points of view that all disagree with each other. But you're saying that's because they're all of the same generation?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So, they're
later generations can't argue with.
Right, but he wouldn't come along and disagree with a particular line and change it to the opposite.
Okay.
Although he can be creative, the Marshal, but I don't think that's what he's trying to do. He only came to this world to receive his reward. So he's just adding in a line in the middle of that.
So he set it up differently with the same
result. The end, same result. Right?
Okay.
At the end is the same. The middle is different because in the Gemara, the way it's.
Show me the line in the Gemara that talks about
the Gemara. Yes, it's the Mesive, halfway down in 4. The beginning of the first one of the line.
Okay,
yeah. Chasid hayabu l'mos ha'olam yoshmo lo bali olam elakadei l'kabel s'charo hevi ha'kadosh baruch ho'alav yisurin hitchil mecharif u'megadef. So he came to this world to receive reward. Hashem gave him yisurin. So that, so what he's, when Marsha is changing, is just that the yisurin he gave him was a good thing. When the Gemara says hevi ha'kadosh baruch ho'alav yisurin, he's interpreting that to mean that he gave him Yisurim out of love,
mm-hmm.
as a way of helping him.
And then he started complaining.
Right,
about
and
it.
Then he gave, and then he said, "Fine, so then you won't get it." So the, that's what's not clear in the Gemara, that the Yisurim and the Gemara are meant to be a Yisurim Shalava, even though you wouldn't necessarily read it that way in the Gemara, because you wouldn't read it that way in the Gemara, because in the first line of the Gemara here, "Bobali olam elakadei l'kabel scharo."
Mm-hmm.
You think, reading this Gemara, like, the reason he was punished is because he had his priorities wrong. His priorities are mixed up, so he had this Yisurim. I was just telling you that there's...
It's fine.
Okay. Right. Oh, Yov. Okay. Oh, at one point it was going to be 8:30. Okay. Fine. Okay. So that's interesting. So the Gemara sounds like it's saying a bad thing. Marsha is saying, no, it's a good thing. Okay.
What started is a good thing, but...
Oh, yeah. It was meant to be good, but then since he complained about it, he said, okay, you don't want to erase your few sins here, we'll do it next world. We'll deal with it in the next world, which is much worse. I'll give you double in this world, even, to really take away from what you get in the next world. Okay. The Gemara that he's quoting, the Marsha here at the end... interesting Gemara here in Chagiga. Acher is Rabbi Meir. Acher Shiatzal Taris Ras. Somebody asked Rabbi Meir. After, so Acher is I don't remember his name, but Acher is one of the Amoraim who actually went way off the Derech and really started out as an Amora and he went totally wrong. So he asked Rabbi Meir after he had gone, after Acher had gone off the Derech, not after Rabbi Meir had gone off the Derech, after Acher had left the path. Became a, I think it's a duki. Amrle, so he says, my dechsiv. So you can already see he's going to be asking, you know, he's framing the question, the Gemara. My dechsiv, why does it say, gam es ze l'umas ze asa Elohim, Hashem does everything tit for tat? So Amrle, he said, Rav Meir said back to Acher, kol ma shebar HaKadosh Baruch Hu bara kenegdo. Everything that Hashem made, he made something next to it, something opposite it. Bara Harim Bara Gvarim. Bara Gvaros. He created mountains, he created valleys, he created seas, he created rivers. He always created something and it's opposite. Amar Lo, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbach, Lo Amar Kain. Well, your Rabbi Akiva didn't say that. El Bar Tzadikim Bara Shoyim. Not that he created something corresponding like a river and a lake, but he created an ocean, he created Tzadikim and Rishoyim, Gan Eden and Gehenim. Sounds like what Acher is trying to say is that you're supposed to be Rishayim in the world. That's okay. Part of the way Hashem made the world. There's no problem with, you know, some people are tzaddikim, some people are rishoy. Big deal. Kol echad v'echad yesh lo shnei chalakim. Oh, so wait. Everybody has...
both of these in him?
Everybody has two portions, two pieces of land, so to speak. Echad v'ganin and echad v'gehenim. Everyone has two pieces of land. One ganin and one gehenim. Zochat tzaddik. So if a tzaddik is good enough... he can inherit two pieces of land because he might get someone else's that's been abandoned by that person's getting double in Gehenim. because his friend, unfortunately, got two portions in Gehenim, so his portion's open in Gan Eden. So Hashem says, okay, you take both. So Amar Rav Misharshi in Ma'akron, he quotes from a pasuk, but that's what the Marasha is bringing out. To try and say that Hashem might give you double in this world in order to take away the schar you would have gotten in Olam Haba, which is it's not such a simple thing to say that you can get double your reward here and then get nothing there and end up getting a worse portion in the world to come because of your because you got everything already here. Okay, so that's a possibility. So that's a fascinating line here in the Gemara anyway. That he was that really frames the book in an interesting way. That according to this, according to the Gemara, the point of his suffering was supposed to be good. And we'll talk about Yisrim Shalava at a different time, but that it was supposed to be something very good. He was supposed to look at the situation and say, okay, this is great. The few sins I have, they'll be taken care of now and I'll have a much easier ride when it gets to Olam Haba. Instead, he complained, and Hashem said, "Okay, so."
Okay, but I see like two planes here because if it's a yisurin, it's supposed to impact negativity. You can't be if you're happy about it. How is it negative? So.
What do you mean?
So, what does it mean to give someone yisurin? It means that you're making them feel miserable.
True.
So.
So aren't they supposed to feel miserable?
Aren't they supposed to be miserable? Why aren't they entitled to feel miserable? Isn't that the whole point? They're not supposed to be sitting there, oh, I'm so happy I have skin boils. Then
maybe.
I mean, I guess there's layers or levels. There's first the acknowledgement that you're suffering, and then you can say, I'm suffering, but okay, it's for a good reason or something.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think that's right. You're not supposed to physically enjoy it, but if a person thinks, boy, I'm sick because Hashem wants to punish me and I'll get reward because I've been accepted the punishment. I guess that's the perspective. It is a different perspective. Mm-hmm. We're used to a perspective on sickness that is different than this, that we just, you know, take medicine and don't even think about it. But the real perspective might be to say, and Hashem gave us those medicines, it's fine.
Right.
But, you know,
why did this happen in the first place?
Yeah. That there's a medrash that says that there is somebody pushed someone else off a cliff and then he ran down and caught him at the bottom. He said, thank you so much for catching me. Wow, this is great. And he said, well, who do you think pushed you down in the first place? We remember Hashem sometimes after we're saved, but Hashem is doing both sides. Hashem.
Tell me what this is, because I say this all the time.
Really? So do I, and I have no idea. No, I saw it once. Really?
So you don't know. I mean, I've never heard that Gemara, but you know, just with what I've been through, when I tell somebody, you know, I'm doing well, they go, Baruch Hashem.
Yeah.
And I just feel like our whole... I mean, I understand why it happens, but we just get so focused on all the Baruch Hashems that you forget to deal with, you know, what you started with, what got you there to tell your story to get to the Baruch Hashem. You know, it's like there's blinders. Like, we only see...
We see Hashem in one way, but not in the other.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah, I could try and find it.
I'd love to find out where that is. Okay.
I always love that. I quote it all the time.
It's great.
It's a great story.
It's a great example.
Because Hashem is, you know, we love to think of Hashem in a happy way, but the reality is, he's the one who brought us Yisurin too. And then he gives us the ability to handle it. So yeah, I mean, we'll talk about Akedah at some point next week probably. We'll talk about Akedah, but, you know, Akedah really has that side to it, that on the one hand, he gives you something and he takes it away. Like Yov said, Hashem nasan v'Hashem lakach. He has both. You can't take Hashem as a one-dimensional figure, so to speak. He gives you both. So yeah, the same way you should be upset when he gives you, or same way you should be happy when he gives you something good. In a sense, why should you be any less happy when he gives you something bad? I don't know. Maybe that's. I mean, it is. I mean, obviously, it's hard to think about. It's not an easy perspective at all. But it's still interesting to think about that as.
I think it's just much more real. I mean, it's...
What do you mean?
Whatever, it's just the same thing that it's when it... You know, you have the same, the exact question of the Gemara, like, you know, to only say, oh, thank you for saving me, but ignoring the fact that you got pushed off a cliff,
right.
You're ignoring half of what happened to you.
Right.
I mean, in some ways, it's a very nice perspective, but...
Right, but how do you...
You can't really appreciate all that God is if all you're doing is seeing him as the catcher.
But if he's the pusher, too, then why should you be any more upset at his being the... If he's both... Then why should you be upset when he pushes you? There's another
way. So I don't have an answer, but I mean, we live a physical, mental, emotional reality that we have our objective sense of what is good mm-hmm. and what is bad, and we assign mm-hmm. values to experiences.
Right.
So nobody wants to be pushed off a cliff. No one's going to say, yeah, I got pushed off a cliff.
Right. But if you assume that he's doing it to catch you later, or for some good reason, if you knew that every time you have Yisurin is in order to prepare you for Olam Haba, et cetera.
Right.
I'm not saying it's easy.
No, I'm saying it's like this, like what therapists say, you know, like, oh, you grow from suffering. It's like, oh, so everybody should suffer and be miserable so they can grow. But, you know, like at the end of that experience, would you want to say, oh, I'm glad that I got pushed and then got caught, or would you rather not have started that whole sea point to start off with?
Well, depends when you, I mean, I would personally rather not have it.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
In the reality of the world, if you could look at the world from above and really see how the whole thing operates, you might appreciate it more. There's the famous example of someone who's planting a garden, and then someone's watching him, and he sees that he plants the seeds, and he sees that he cuts it all down, and then he grinds it all, and looks worse and worse for these seeds, and then he comes out with a cake. So all along the process, you could say, "Wow, this is terrible." He's doing, but if you see the whole picture, our problem is we don't see the whole picture. If we saw the whole picture, it would be much more clear. You'd say, of course that was good. Of course that would take suffering.
Well, if you saw the whole picture, you wouldn't be petrified as you're falling off the cliff.
Exactly. But I guess...
But the truth is, not everybody gets caught.
Uh-huh. Well, in this world, not everyone gets caught. But if there are two worlds, and if the game doesn't end when it seems to end, so then maybe
I don't know if you're going to Gehenna or you're going to Gan Eden, so you still don't know,
Still don't. But if we assume simply like this Gemara, that Yisurim are meant to take away the few sins we have so that we can do better in Olam Haba, then we'd say, well, that's kind of encouraging.
Yeah, so then the question is, how can you identify if everything bad that happens to you is a Yisurim?
Ah, so then what do we call Yisurim? And we'll see that. What exactly Yisurim is, and how you even know. Why would Hashem give Yisurim? That's tricky. I guess not everything is Yisurim. But why do you think not everything would be Yisurim? Why not? Actually, the Gemara says somewhere that even if you take, if you mean to take a big coin out of your pocket and you take a smaller one, that's Yisurim. So the Gemara assumes anything could be Yisurim. Everything's meant, everything that negative that happens to you.
And the Rambam would laugh at you.
Yeah, well, why?
The Rambam doesn't buy that, I don't think.
I
think the Rambam is a little bit more into...
It's more rational, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, could be. But
So if you live in that tension, if you're not like a total Kabbalist that believes that every itch on your nose is from God,
right.
Then you're left, you know, trying to figure this all out.
It's true.
Like, what just is, or what is God touching me? Is everything God touching me?
It's true. And how do you know... Yeah, you're right. There's an argument whether even if I choose to, the shirt I choose to put on in the morning, is that something Hashem chose, or is that my choice? And Hashem couldn't care less, and he had no idea. And that's a perfectly fine option to say that Hashem really doesn't care what shirt you put on in the morning. Rambam says like that.
This infectious disease is just, the laws of infectious disease, and it's nothing to do with God anyway.
Oh, well, so what he says is that things that affect... That's tricky. That's a gray one. That's a gray area. He says things that affect the whole world, you can't change. You can't make a decision that will change how a war is supposed to be fought or anything like that. If a bomb drops on a country, I don't know if Rambam used that exact example. Probably not. But if a bomb drops on a country, then that's from Hashem, clearly. If you choose to put on a green shirt or a blue shirt, Hashem really didn't care. Things that affect
everybody. But I don't know if I catch malaria.
Yeah. That's interesting. Let's
say and the guy next door to me didn't. Why me, not him?
Well, so you're assuming that Hashem left that up to what you might call chance.
The laws of nature. How do you know what is the laws of nature and what is not?
So we'll see. Yeah, that's a good question. Were there things that Hashem outsourced to be really not in his control, so to speak? Now, that's not to say he couldn't reacquire the control, but he chose. Mm-hmm. So an example that's given, Ramban also says in Devarim, he says that, again, he doesn't say his exact words, but imagine McDonald's. So there's the whole chain of McDonald's. The CEO of McDonald's doesn't choose to know everything that's going on in every store. He's outsourced it. He's got managers. He's got, you know, all types of underlings, and each store has a manager, and he has no idea who did what was just purchased at, you know, the McDonald's number 40,000 in Wichita. He doesn't care. Now, if he chose to, he could find out very quickly, one touch on the button, but he pretty much plays golf because he doesn't really have anything, right? He left all the important decisions to people who can do that. Now, that's not to say he could not choose that. Ramchal says in Derech Hashem, I said this to someone and they thought it was Rabbi Gorsis, but he said it. He chose to outsource the weather. Hashem has no idea, in a sense. The weather is the way it is. It'll rain, it'll snow, and you can see.
That's what, I mean, we learned the Rambam with Jackie Rosenzweig. Mm-hmm. That's what we read, that he created the natural order, and the Rambam forces in, like, all the miracles that we read about in, you know, whatever, Yehoshua and the sun's dying. He put that into the natural code that at a certain point in time that will happen, but he set the order and let it go.
Right. Yeah. The Rambam says that. In
I don't remember where we read this. But.
Okay, so that's we'll see. Okay, interesting. That you're saying in terms of the natural order of the universe, not in terms of decisions that people can make that would destroy. Because
right.
What's left for us?
Right. That so I think he was such into like the law of nature that someone described it as like a computer. If then, you know, so he created the code, and then there's certain specifics where like if Yehoshua is in certain circumstances and the sun needs to stand still, it'll happen.
Right.
But it's built in.
Right, so he was taking control by being the original computer programmer.
Exactly.
Which has a certain amount of control. In a sense, whoever designed Microsoft Word is affecting me every day.
100%.
Doesn't mean they're at my house.
But the program runs.
The program runs.
He wrote the program. He pushed play.
Right. Okay. Good. That's fine. Fine. And you see that in terms of weather. They try and predict weather. So some people want to be, Ramchal wants to make a differentiation between the sun rising and setting, which he thinks would be more under Hashem's direct control every day it happens, versus the weather, which as much as we try and predict it, we just can't seem to. Right? They get it wrong most of the time, because it seems to just do whatever it wants. We can't, there's no law, it doesn't follow clear laws, you know, there's no laws of weather. As opposed to the sun that goes up and down without really ever, almost ever, stop other than once. Okay. So that's good. So that's an interesting marsha. And it turns out then, if that's true, then the book is really trying to say, the message of the book really is, that there's Yisurim, and that Hashem wants to give us Yisurim, which we have to define what Yisurim are, in order to make our trip to Olam Haba smoother. And if we choose to accept them, then things will be good. It's very simplistic. It's fine. In a sense, this week we're looking kind of at the ideal, and then we'll see, well, what happens when that goes wrong in the future. But and then if one doesn't accept them, or doesn't accept them with love, let's say, or doesn't accept them at all, just complains, and he, you know, Macharif and Magadif complains and kvetches, then the person will Hashem will give them double. He says, fine, not only will I take those away, I'll give you double the reward, and somehow that makes him have more, you know, punishment in the next world. Which is interesting, because double reward doesn't mean you did more sins here, but somehow the amount of reward seems to be equivalent to the amount of punishment you got. He didn't do anything wrong just because he got lots of reward, but it seems to be work against him anyway. Okay. So that's interesting. Okay, so the Gemara finishes on page 4. There are all these. So it says, the Gemara says, actually, this is Machlokas Tanoim. The Tanoim already argued about this. Tanoi, and it goes, he lived in, as to whether he was Jewish or non-Jewish. He lived in the times of the Shoftim, the times of Achashverosh. Now we're really going all over the place. Times of David, times of Shiva, times of Gazdim, times of Yaakov. And here you go, because Dina Bas Yaakov Nasa, number at the end of the bottom of the page. He married, Yehov married Dina, because it says, Kediber achas ha-nevelos, Tadaber, you're speaking like one of the nevelos, Pisa, Uksifasam, ki nevela asa b'Yisrael. Okay. So maybe he married Dina. But Kulu Tanai, all of these opinions, that these last final opinions here, this final list, assume, says the Gemara at the bottom of the page, where it's underlined, that you have Yisrael. All of those assume that he was Jewish. Levar Meyesh Omrim, except the very last one about Yaakov. Why? How do we know that all of those, what is it, four opinions, five opinions, assume he was Jewish other than the last one? That said, because the Isaac Adaitach Meumo Sa'ola, because if he was not Jewish, Basar Deshchiz Moshe.
I lost your word.
Oh, at the very bottom, the third line from the bottom. Bottom of page four.
Okay,
Vechulu? Yeah, Vechulu Tanai. Now, all of those final opinions, those last list, Shoftim Achashverosh, that whole list, Sviral, who they assume that Yov Yisrael, that Yov was Jewish, other than the last opinion, the Yesh Omrim, about Yaakov, that he was, she was, his wife was Dina, the Esau, now how do you know that? As the Gemara comes up with that, the Esau Gadaitach, Meyom HaSa'olam, because if he was not Jewish, Basar Teshchiv Moshe, Mishar Yishchina Alov Nechavim, after Moshe died, apparently there was no more prophecy for non-Jews, says the Gemara. After Moshe died. So it has to be all those opinions that say he was from the times of the Shoftim, or Achashverosh, or David, or Malchus Shva, all of those opinions, he was obviously Jewish, because it was after Moshe died. Okay. This is all kind of parenthetical. Moshe requested that non-Jews no longer be able to have prophecy, and he was granted that wish. He got what he wanted. Shenemar, like it says, we will leave me and you, meaning, or you and your people, Moshe and the Jews, that no one else besides Moshe and the Jews would receive prophecy.
Do we have a Messiah who wrote Eov?
Who wrote Eov? There is an opinion that Moshe wrote it, which would obviously have repercussions for when he lived. That's a Gemara in Bava Basra. Oh, this is also in Bava Basra. It's a different Gemara in Bava Basra about who wrote all those books. I think it might say Moshe and maybe Shlomo. I think those are two opinions that are given. Shlomo might have written it, but I can check on that. It's a good question, who wrote this book. But I think those are opinions that are given, but I'll check. Because there's the whole Gemara about who wrote Shirashirim, who wrote, Shmuel, I read all those books. Okay, so that covers who Eov was, at least a little bit, and also an important point here about Yisurim, in that, you know, a person should take what they're given, I guess, and not you know, assuming you know it's Yisurim, and not complain. I guess we'll start this next week. I guess next week we'll do this. We'll talk next week about Hashgacha Pratis, and what exactly Hashgacha Prati is, who has Hashgacha Prati. There are four possibilities that I picked out. This is not authoritative, but I found some perspectives on why a person would get Hashgacha, who gets Hashgacha, beautiful Mor Nevuchim here. We'll start with that next time. I'm assuming you forget. I'm not holding you.
Yeah, no, no. So,
please, no problem at all.
No, no. So I would love.